Greetings, Earthlings. Welcome to Voices from the Real World. Profile Theater is a theater company located in Portland, Oregon. Profile Theater centers the season around a season-long featured writer. Our best artists help us see. And at Profile, each year, we use a different writer's unique perspective as a lens that helps us see our shared world in new and surprising ways. Community Profile is an affinity space built around the structure of a free writing workshop. Participants in Community Profile meet, write, support, share, and bear witness to other people who may have walked a mile in their shoes. In Community Profile, we feature writers who have won awards and had numerous books published, as well as writers who are making their first foray into expressing themselves on paper. The result is writing that is singularly personal, provocative, powerful, moving, funny, tragic, beautiful, and that encapsulates the entirety of the human experience. What this podcast does is give those writers, those creators, a chance to share their life stories and their writing in a public forum so that we can celebrate and appreciate victories that have been won and challenges that have been overcome by people whose lives you may recognize or be experiencing for the very first time.
And welcome to Satellite, the Our Orange Sky edition. That's right, opening night is fast approaching for the first world premiere of this two-year season, Our Orange Sky by Christopher Oscar Pena. The show is a companion piece with How to Make an American Son, which Profile produced in June of last year. We catch up with Orlando and his family. About 20 years after American Son, Orlando was in high school in American Son. For this first installment, I'm talking to Orange Sky's director, Evren Ojkin, about working on new plays, working on personal autobiographical plays, and in general, working on plays about the immigrant experience. Evren is a Turkish-American director, also a writer, an arts leader, an advocate. He does a ton of work in the new play development space and also in reimagining the classics. In fact, he comes to us fresh off of directing Macbeth at Oregon Shakespeare Festival, where he served as interim artistic director in 2023, shepherding the organization through a very difficult time. And before that, he was OSF's Associate Artistic Director and Director of Artistic Programming, where he oversaw more than 30 productions. Evren's also the founder of Maya Directors and an affiliated artist with Golden Thread Productions. He serves on the boards of both Middle Eastern North African Theater Makers Alliance and the Playwrights Foundation. Portland audiences should know him from directing Nine Parts of Desire at Portland Center Stage, but unfortunately, that March 2020 production was shut down by COVID just days before opening. We're excited that he is back in Portland directing the world premiere of Our Orange Sky, and I was able to grab a few moments of his time before a rehearsal last week. Enjoy. Hi, Evren.
Hello.
Thanks so much for joining us on Satellite, and welcome to Portland, sort of. You've been here before, yeah?
Yeah, I've worked here twice before.
Oh, twice?
Yeah. I mean, one was the workshop for this show, so, but this is my third trip to Portland for work.
And before was Nine Parts of Desire,
at Portland Center Stage, which no one got to see, but we did open it on March 12th, I think, right as everything was shutting down.
Yeah, there were maybe some like previews that happened.
I think we did three previews, and then we had a staff and sort of friends opening.
Yeah.
With the idea that we were going to come back a week or two later.
Right.
And then
I remember that. Yeah.
But I was at OSF at the time. So I was really actually, I was opening that show and then shutting down the OSF season on Skype at the time.
Yeah. So
it was an interesting time.
Yeah.
It's nice to be back.
Yes. Yes. How has the reentry been? And now you're you're freelance.
Yeah, no, it's this year is sort of a real transitional year for me coming out of the OSF leadership position, which I'm so proud of everything we accomplished, but it was fairly publicly a hard time. And then, you know, having set up the 24 season and it seems to be doing well for them, it was important to me to sort of focus on my own artistry. And when I made the announcement I was leaving, the first message I got was actually from Chris Pena and Josh saying, hey, are you available for this? We were assuming you weren't, but if you are, let's talk. And I was so excited because Chris and I have had an artistic crush on each other and have been friends and circling around each other for almost 15 years now. And it's just never worked somehow, which is kind of surprising, but it's been really, really lovely to finally be in a room with him.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, how do you know Chris, you think, originally, if you can think back that far?
Well, everyone knows Chris.
Right.
So it's
I do get that impression.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I'm going to remember exactly when we met, but we sort of were really circling around the same spaces. And then he would come to San Francisco a lot because he's from the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And we would go out and talk and plan and plot and talk about different plays. I've always really loved his writing voice. It's this really, not to set him up in a way, but I call this specific play quite Chekhovian, not just in terms of the sort of scope of it all or the depth of what it's dealing with, but that really unique combination of comedy and silliness intersecting with real pathos and pain and intergenerational trauma feels actually very, so I sort of joke that this is his three sisters, but it's three brothers.
Oh yeah.
But I do love the fact that his writing tends to be light and funny and people are trying their best to find humor with each other. And he really, he's known to be a little ornery, I sometimes feel online. And what's so funny about him is he's such a big romantic, big-hearted teddy bear, actually, despite the, you know, the edge. And I feel like this play especially really has that in spades. And at this point, post-pandemic, I always say this, you know, it's not like I'm directing only light shows. I did Macbeth, Torch Song, this one. But I'm always looking for joy in the rooms I'm running now. Life and world is so hard that I feel like the reason to do theater, this communal art form, is to enjoy each other and the process. And it feels like such a luxury and a gift to be doing what we're doing right now. It's important to me that we do everything we can to sort of center joy.
Yeah, I was wondering whether, similar to Chekhov, it would be easy to sort of misread it and guide it into being really, heavy or to lean into the drama and forget about the comedy too much. Yeah. But
yeah, no, it's kind of an interesting one. I mean, I can nerd out about Chekhov all day, but I do feel like American artists and audiences have a misunderstanding of Chekhov's, through a misunderstanding of the Stanislavski method, we've had a misunderstanding of Chekhov, where I think a lot of actors and directors love the pain performance of it all, or and at the end of the day, Chekhov was Russian and of a period where it was really as much about class and as much about how ridiculous the rich class is. So things like Three Sisters, although it reveals so much beautiful, it's a beautiful exploration of what it means to be human and what it means to not have what you need. It's also about how these three rich sisters who could just move to Moscow just don't, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like this play, again, I don't want to sort of only contextualize it that way because it's certainly more than that, but it is about the other side of the American dream. So if you are one of the very, very few folks, very, very few families who make it despite all odds, what happens on the other side And is that accomplishment in itself enough to make you happy? And Chris, from his personal experience in Hollywood, as well as his parents' experience, really making it, really becoming poster children for the American dream, for, you know, especially Latino immigrants. It's super interesting. The reason why I got super excited when Josh approached me about this is I feel like the American theater, or even Hollywood, really our mainstream storytelling spaces, are interested in a very specific kind of immigrant story where over there is terrible and they're so lucky to be here. And American stories tend to love an individual success story. And me being Middle Eastern, I have a sort of very communal understanding of how one becomes successful, or how you function within family and community and intergenerationally as you move through the world, and how much of your success and failure is really dependent on your people. And I was so excited. It's certainly a lot of the sort of those immigration questions are in the play, don't get me wrong, but it's also interesting to work on a play that deals with a brown family that has resource. That is not the question, right? They have made it. They are successful. Some of them are exceptional people. Our lead, Orlando, is an exceptional writer who's created a TV series in Hollywood that centers a brown family like his. So has succeeded in that really 1% of people do. I think that's in the play as a line. And I think that got really exciting for me. Because I feel there is a very specific requirement sometimes for us, immigrants, brown folks, queer folks, whatever marginalized identity you're bringing into the space, is you have to sort of perform your pain as it relates to your identity to be welcomed into the space. And I always say that's part of that feels like I'm having to prove that I'm human like you before you will care about me. And that's actually an incredibly dehumanizing act for generative creative folks. And I try really hard in my spaces to not do that for folks anyway, but this play sort of rejects the whole idea. And the thing I also find fascinating, interesting, challenging about it is that our central figure is not likable. He is not well-behaved. He is dealing with so many things that manifest in really harmful, toxic ways, but also he's in pain, but also he's funny, but he's also deserving of and searching for love. And can an American audience give that space to a brown queer kid who's grown up to be this difficult adult, like we do in so many white plays? I mean, The Humans, Mad Men, you know, people acting in terrible, terrible ways, but we actually still are able to give them space for their pain and humanity and their journey, regardless of how they're behaving. So Chris is really specifically and politically is doing that. If I hurt, but I'm terrible, I'm also terribly behaved, will you care? And I'm super excited to find out. You know, it's a big ask on the best of days, but right now I think it's a really brave ask that Chris is putting into the play, and I'm working with Matthew Cepeda, who's playing that part, to thread the needle so that we don't back away from that, but also are able to give enough openness and vulnerability so that the audience comes along. This play is a really beautiful challenge, which is, I love working on shows where I'm not sure.
Yeah, there was a lot in there. Yeah. I know. Noah's wonderful. It pinged for me when you were talking about specifically immigrants or people of color needing to sort of perform their trauma mm-hmm. as their like entry ticket into mm-hmm. being worthy of their story being heard. That was something that we talked a lot about during Chris's play Awestruck.
Of course.
And how he was like, I don't even want to be having to write this play, mm-hmm. But I feel like it's the play that like the American theater requires of me for my work to be worthwhile. And this feels so much more like the story he wants to be writing and exploring. But I also am fascinated by this idea of Orlando as not a very likable mm-hmm. person, or a person who behaves badly.
Yeah.
But I had not been curious about whether my or audience's view of that character is different, if we would give more latitude mm-hmm. Or just like instinctively more compassion to a white person mm-hmm. who comes from similar privilege. And that's a really interesting question.
Yeah, it's such a, and the American canon is filled with plays of very successful people in pain. And what's so interesting, Chris has many friends who won the big awards. He's been working at that level for a while. I have so many friends who won the big awards. And what's interesting is you get it. And what a lot of people talk about is that the night you get the award is actually really difficult because you worked your whole life to get this thing. And then you find out, is this it? What is next? And that moment of huge success, once you've come down the adrenaline mountain and, you know, the happiness and the joy of having accomplished, is that enough? And, you know, this play really sort of thinks about that, especially in the context of when your success comes after your parents have sacrificed everything to be able to get you the opportunity and have given so much of themselves and their potential and their lives so that you as the next generation must succeed. And then you do, and then what? Again, this story is told in so many ways in different contexts in the American theater. And then Chris is sort of adding his own family to that canon. And that's the other thing about the play that's, you know, as a director, when a playwright is working from such a personal place and such a present tense personal place, so it's not something that's happened 20 years ago that he's had the distance or the ability to process. It's really about what's happening now or how he's feeling now or how he's seeing his family now. And that's raw and difficult and emotional. And in a lot of ways, the pull and push of that is also really exciting. And I think when you add all of those things together, I do think for audiences, they will feel that vibration in the play. And the thing I love about Profile is that they are committed to that process of pushing a play there and then passing it along and pushing it into the field so that it has many more productions and a writer can really, they commit to writers and their work and their process in such a beautiful way. So that's the purpose of this. But either way, even if it does not work, I think audiences will be able to feel that vibration of the personal magic that Chris is weaving into the play and that we're all, as his collaborators, are holding space for and honoring and uplifting. So I do know that it's going to be a really moving, exciting evening of theater. And then, you know, now we just got to honor it.
And I have been so curious about how you navigate a rehearsal space that is so autobiographical mm-hmm. with the playwright in the room and his family, mm-hmm. right, is who is being portrayed very, and, you know, yeah, like romantic relationships that are still, I think Chris would be okay with me saying this, like that are still like fresh and tender wounds, mm-hmm. you know?
You know, Chris is a professional. He knows how to make a play, and he understands that challenge of when is it helpful for this to be exactly what it is, and when is it helpful for it to have some poetic license, both in his writing and depictions of the family and himself, but also in how we interpret those things. I'm a big believer in, you know, you cast the people, and then you direct the play for them. And that's sort of what we're doing. And we have a really beautiful group of actors who are coming with such love for these characters and such love for this play and Chris. Many of them have been in multiple plays of his now. So they have an understanding of how his language and how his process works. In terms of my process, this is always true when you're developing a new work, is when do you say what? And in what way is something I think a lot about. Both because when something is this personal, they know things I don't. So I always start from, I'm not understanding. I always joke with, anytime I'm doing a new play, I have a big spiel about, let's not do fix it dramaturgy. Let's not try to just fix the play, because some of the best plays, the parts of the play that are special don't work. It's the thorny, edgy bits that don't quite fit together that are the magic. So I'm very committed to not cutting those when you're going through a new development process. So I ask the actors to treat this play like it's perfect and give it their all, and then we'll know what doesn't work. And I think for a personal process like this, that's especially important. And then the last thing I'll say is that my role has been to reflect to Chris what's on the page. Because, and there have been sections where I'm like, hey, I know you and your story and who you are. And as such, this monologue, I understand every word in it. I don't know if we would if we did not know you and your story. You know, and he's really, really open and excited for that kind of feedback. And it's been, I mean, we're like, you know, fighting brothers or husbands or something. So there's a lot of sort of like passionate, respectful, and important disagreement and argument in our room back and forth. And we do it with great joy and great wink, wink fun. And I think the actors know that that's what the space is. And also, I'm Middle Eastern, he's Latino, we're doing a Latino play. If you do not have argument in the space, you're actually leaving something on the table. So I always believe in that process is product. So we gotta make a space that these brown people in the play feel like it's home, so that they can make this home on stage.
Yes, yeah, so you mentioned that you are Turkish, mm-hmm. And you said something about like how you get called on often to do mm-hmm. work like this. Is there any sort of common thread, or what would you say feels like a common thread throughout those stories for you, or what you like return to? Mm-hmm.
For me, because I'm Middle Eastern, and I've also been lucky enough and honored to be part of a leadership group for that community, where I'm part of the founding board of Middle Eastern North African Theater Makers Alliance, advocating for more inclusion and opportunities for Middle Eastern North African stories and artists. And that's been such a joyous part of my life. The thing I would say for me is, because of all that is known about me, and because I'm so publicly Middle Eastern in a way, in my work, I think a lot of people assume that my work is innately political. And this might sound like a cop-out, but I'm never actually choosing a play for its politics. A lot of what I find really interesting is what I love is the intergenerational aspect of Middle Eastern work, which actually really applies to Latino work as well. The idea of carving out space, and how do you define your own identity according to your understanding, rather than both Latino stories folks and Middle Eastern folks have been so vilified by the center in over decades in incredibly harmful, awful ways, that a lot of the work can be in response rather than, and when you're building something in response to an attack, you're not always actually telling your own story in the way that you would. So those are the plays. I'm really character driven. I'm really story driven. I direct a lot of family plays because of that, I think. And the work gets contextualized as political, and I'm not afraid of politics, but it's rarely the reason why I'm doing it. And that's been a really interesting negotiation I have with myself as I'm back in the freelance world, and you know, the hustle of getting work is real. Now that I'm a bit more established, I try to avoid those plays that feel like that does not center someone's actual story. It's a response, or it's being told to with a white audience in mind. I'm always centering the community that the play represents. I try to make the work with and for them.
Yeah, that reminds, do you know Lisa Dring at all?
No.
She is a friend of Chris's, I think from the Bay Area, also a playwright, who came up and did a workshop with our community profile group, mm-hmm. which right now is all first generation and immigrants, that Chris is gonna teach a workshop. And her workshop was all about sort of interrogating how are we right, like what are the stories our communities need mm-hmm. versus, yeah, like our obligation to educate white audiences, or again, sort of like show us, earn our humanity by like, you know, generating empathy through.
I joke sometimes that, you know, I've been honored enough to be associated with Golden Thread Productions, which is the country's first theater company devoted to the Middle East, founded by the brilliant Taranji Ghazaryan, my mentor friend. The reason why I have a career, I've been involved with them, oh gosh, at this point, it's getting up to 20 years. So I've gotten this amazing gift of being able to work my craft, work my understanding of who I am, all of the corners of who I am. I carry so many identities that are intersectional and make a lot of sense for me, but I'm told by many folks are oppositional, like being queer and Muslim. I've had that luxury for myself, because Taranj and Golden Thread was able to give me that space to build my own spine as an artist, so that when I go out there and work in non-Middle Eastern spaces, I'm able to know who I am and how I work. And I see, even after so many years, so many younger Middle Eastern artists not having that opportunity. They tend to be the only one a lot. So it's, in a way, if I have a political mission, it's to give that opportunity to those writers, those actors, those up and coming directors, so that they can really actually figure out how to listen to their own voice and know that their play, their work does not have to speak for all Middle Eastern folks, which is actually a made up Western umbrella. You know, all of these are sort of lobbying tools, Middle Eastern, Latino, these are include people from countries that have been at war for hundreds of years. So in that way, I find great joy in being able to do that in the rooms I run as a director, but also as a champion and an advocate. And there, so much of that is also what Chris does in a lot of ways, is to advocate for that inclusion and that ability for people to tell their stories in their own, on their own terms. And I do have to say, again, to sing Profile and Josh's praises, this idea that this long-term commitment to a playwright's work, so that they do multiple plays in production with the company, is a great way to do that, because then Chris can tell all sorts of stories. The three plays he's put into this trilogy of plays that the Portland audiences have seen are very different from each other. And what a joy that a queer Latino writer gets to sort of show the world everything they're capable of, in a way, rather than being able to only do one play that all of a sudden becomes so important because it must stand in for all things Chris has to say about being Latino and being queer, which is an impossible ask.
Yeah, and Chris's work gets to be alongside several works by another Latino writer. And
who writes plays that are nothing like his.
So, yeah. So different, right?
I love Chris Diaz's work. Just to say that out loud, I love, love, love his work. And it's the two Chris's together is actually a really smart idea, but also makes no sense, which I love.
Right, yes. And yeah, we're just scratching the tip of the iceberg of the diversity of the Latino experience. Great. Well, I have to let you get to rehearsal. Yes. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have?
The only thing I'll say is it is specifically in Portland. You know, I was at OSF Southern Oregon, and we talk a lot about the lack of diversity in Oregon and in Portland specifically, whether that be in the theater community. You hear about it, you talk about it, and it's been really lovely to be able to cast this play all local and have these incredible designers, all of whom are queer, most of whom are Latino or immigrants themselves or children of immigrants, and to be able to have prove to the world that this talent exists and they can work at this level and they can make some exceptional work, I think is, if I do have a political mission in that, it's really, really exciting. And I think it's really wonderful to be able to get the right people and not feel like we cannot find that here. And I hope that, you know, in a way that gets celebrated about the production as well.
Yeah. Chris has put together a good company, yeah, really, to work with. Our Orange Sky by Christopher Oscar Pena opens Saturday, June 8th, and runs through Sunday, June 16th, with previews starting this Thursday. This Thursday is also our Pride Affinity Night, where members of the LGBTQIA2 Spirit Plus community can book a $5 ticket and enjoy a pre-show reception with some complimentary snacks, wine, drinks, and entry for a raffle prize. Then we do the same thing the following Thursday, $5 tickets, pre-show reception, but for our BIPOC community members. Go to profiletheater.org for those promo codes. They're right on our website. And to get tickets for any other of our performances of Our Orange Sky. We hope to see you at the theater.